Third hour, Darren Donick and Jace here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Monday afternoon. Hope you're having a great start to your week. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you. Chase McCabe is off this week. We head east this time every week. We bring in Vince Farrar from the Sports Animal, WNML, there in Knoxville, at Vince Sports on Twitter. Give him a follow. Vinny, how you doing? How was your weekend?
It was good. It was good. I hope yours was.
Yeah, everything was good. I was in your neck of the woods for four days, and I'm back. Yeah, great weather, by the way, in Gatlinburg. So nothing, no complaints. And right now what's interesting is how can I complain whenever you've got your AD has tested positive and is isolating. Your basketball coach, Rick Barnes, has now tested positive and is isolating. And I think the chancellor is being isolated because of close contact, right, of some of the positive tests. So right now, and all activities have paused for the Tennessee basketball program, which there are huge expectations for this upcoming season, but they are going to have to navigate through some choppy waters this year starting right now.
Yeah, and I'm sure for Tennessee fans it feels like a pile-on. The football season is gone terribly. They're excited as all get out about the basketball season. It starts on Wednesday, and now those games are very much in jeopardy. And you're hearing about your head coach with COVID, and they had multiple COVID positives come out of the last line of testing that they got back on Sunday. So it's concerning for sure. And you mentioned, you know, Philip Fulmer as well. So the Tennessee football team, in fact, they didn't practice on Sunday because they have seen that through the SEC, the teams that travel seem to have more issues with COVID afterwards. So they didn't practice yesterday to make sure they get their test results back first, which they hadn't finished getting them in today. So this is something that the university and a lot of people are dealing with those numbers going up all over the place. But it is definitely a concern, and those games in jeopardy this week.
Is it fair to say that the Tennessee football program has been around longer than since, let's say, the 60s, right? It didn't start up in 1960, correct?
Correct. Well, you're really testing me now, Darren, with your trivia.
Didn't start up in the 50s, did it? No. It actually started up like pre-1900. So this is like the late 1800s, right? It's been around a long time, 120 years. Mm-hmm. When you think about that much football, I don't even know if they wore helmets back then. I'm not sure they did, not even leather helmets. But they've never lost five consecutive games by double digits in program history, and that's what's going on right now. Ooh, that is not a stat you want to be attached to, and currently Jeremy Pruitt and his staff is attached to that stat and this team.
It's a bad stat. It's an ugly stat, and you know, we've talked about it. There are plenty of other ugly stats that are there under Jeremy Pruitt and this program right now. You know, if five losses in a row isn't bad enough, then, you know, by double digit. When you think about the low times during, you know, all this terrible run of what the last, you know, 13 years or so, to have things you've never done during that period come up, you know, it obviously is, like I've said before, kind of a pile-on situation with some of those numbers. Hard to explain. And, they probably felt better about I know Jeremy Pruitt felt better about the way they played, but you still play better. You're better in a lot of statistical categories, outgain your opponent and, you know, fewer penalties and just so many stats, and you still lose the game by 13. Just kind of the way things have gone.
And the second half just continues to be abysmal for the Vols. I mean, they're getting the starts they're looking for, and basically it just all goes to you-know-what after the first quarter or the first half. It just all goes away. All the good feelings go away. They've now outbeen scored in this losing streak 108-14 in the second half. I mean, That's why I said, you know, Jeremy Pruitt, this is the learning curve that you get by taking this job, right? When you've never been at this level. Like, stop talking about, you know, what winning looks like and what winning programs look like and they're getting there and I can get – like, just stop talking about that stuff because nobody feels like the gap is closing. Nobody's going to believe you. It just sounds like words. And, you know, since you've made those type of comments, things like this keep happening and stats like this keep getting thrown out there. And it becomes laughable. So stop talking about it. People just want actions. They don't want words.
Well, and Darren, this has happened for, it happened during the Butch Jones era.
Yes,
it happened during Derek Dooley.
Yep.
Your words as a head coach when you're losing get picked apart. And maybe some things that would just get glossed over when you're winning games or no one were paying attention to it. Now people are dialed in and uber focused on everything you say. Like today, he was talking about this being their best offensive performance. Well, they didn't produce very many points. Mm-mm. So, you know, that's something that, you know, it's 17 points on the board. So, people are like, okay, that's your best offensive performance. You had 17 points.
Right. And his look around college football. That's what people would say. Look around college football every week on the scoreboard, and you're praising 17 points?
Right. And what he is referring to is the way they played and the yards and things like that. I mean, he was asked in the post game about whether he still had trust in Jim Chaney as offensive coordinator. He's like, yeah, we had more yards than they did or something like that. But people are like, who cares?
Right. You're playing catch up at the end. I mean,
right. Yeah, exactly. Now I'll give them credit. Their offensive line and Eric Gray. I mean, I think they both had their best individual game, but it's the totality of it. I mean, you know, stats can't carry you through right now. It's about getting wins because there's plenty of time. You're not going to apologize when you get outgained and you win the game. So you can't really fall back on that. And just people, I don't think, are in the mood to hear that kind of stuff right now.
Well, this is when you know it's reaching a new level. This is year three for Jeremy Pruitt. And you can tell that he's starting to feel the heat because – he's now starting to get a little snippy, isn't he? And that's when that to me is always the first indicator. The coach, whether he admits it or not publicly, whenever he starts getting snippy, and typically he doesn't do that, that means he's starting to feel the heat. He's starting to feel the pressure is real. Do you believe that? Do you buy that or do you not?
Well, if it's out of character, like you mentioned, he then yeah. Now, if it, in a post game, it's one thing in a post game. I kind of understand it a little bit more. You know, they're so fresh; those guys are hot. If you're that way after you've had time to cool off and prepare and think about questions you're going to ask and things like that in a, you know, in a midweek press conference, and that's your tone, I think that's kind of a worse look. But to his credit, he hasn't done that. But he did do it in the post game where someone asked him what he says to the fans that are frustrated or want to know about the direction of the program, something to that effect. And he said, "That's not my job. I'm here to coach football." Paraphrase.
Yikes.
So, yeah. So, I mean, it's not like he berated anyone, but it still was a little bit out of character because typically even if he, you know, he doesn't care for a question, he hasn't been rude, not that that was rude, but it was a little bit different for him. So yeah, maybe there is a correlation, but I think it's worse in midweek settings than postgame.
So yeah, I saw again where he is saying Jared Garantano gives him his best chance to win. I mean, I just continued to shake my head at this. And yet he says Jared Garantano gives him the best chance to win, and yet he keeps trotting him out there. And in the last two games, when the game is over and they don't have a chance to win, he's willing to throw out, you know, the freshman.
Right. And in fact, he said in the post game, he said absolutely when asked if Garantano gave him the best chance to win. So it's not like it's you know, a coin toss in his opinion. He said, I wouldn't put him out there if I didn't think that. And, you know, today he was talking about how, you know, Garantano did a really good job in getting him in the right run plays. And, you know, outside of a couple of plays, he played a really good game. But not all plays are equal in a game. And when you have the catastrophic mistakes like that, especially for an older guy, that's what makes it less excusable. And he even mentioned it when he was asked about the play specifically, that pick six. He said, well, you know, you just got to throw the ball away, right? He said, it's simple. Just if it's not, you can't. He was late on the throw, and he said, if it's not there, you got to throw it away. We take 3 points. He says, it's simple, right?
Hey,
and
Vince,
even he's saying it's simple, right? And but yet it's still like a regular play because he hasn't cost him his job yet.
Help me understand why he doesn't understand. If that pick six is from a freshman, he gets the leash is so much longer with everybody, the fans, the media, because he can say that's part of the learning curve. This is the part that he's going to have to go through. And unfortunately, we have to take lumps from the young man because this is where he learns. But instead, when this happens, it's a guy who's been around forever, and this gives the immediate pile-on of, you've got no excuses. You tell everybody this is the best guy for the job, and this guy has got all kinds of experience, and he's still doing this stuff. And yet you've got a freshman that you're scared to death to put out there because he's not ready. Well, you could get the same results. And to me, you get a longer leash with everybody if you say, all right, guys, you got to understand, this is what I told you. This is part of sticking a freshman out there. These are the lumps we all have to go through together. This is what he has to do. Unfortunately, I wish he wouldn't, but this is part of it. But instead, you've got the guy who's the seasoned veteran out there doing this. And whenever you try to justify anything that he does on a play like this, everybody just throws their hands up in the air and like, whatever, man. They don't want to hear it. How does he not understand that?
Well, just in coach's nature, they are not about playing for the future because oftentimes you don't see that future. I don't think he is wired like that. Like, well, I'll get people to, you know, to give me more slack if my freshman makes mistakes versus a veteran making mistakes. Bottom line is, he's still got to win ball games to see that young freshman through. And then also we've seen coaches that know an awful lot about football not be able to make the right decisions on quarterbacks. I mean, there was that issue with Butch Jones, with Derek Dooley, when we've seen it with offensive coordinators. I wonder how torn the room is between Pruitt and Jim Chaney and Chris Winkie and T. Martin on who they think should be the quarterback. I mean, is this Jeremy Pruitt overruling all those guys that are ready to move on to Harrison Bailey? I mean, that's another part of it there. And then obviously if everyone else around you is telling you you need to go to the young quarterback, and I don't know that that's the case. I know that Jim Chaney is certainly restricted with Garantano, but with a young quarterback, you're going to be restricted also. But you're right. Fans don't want to hear it. They're done with it. And I'm surprised that they I shouldn't say surprised. I'm not. I would have gone with Bailey already. I thought you had a great opportunity to do it in the open week, but you know he still talks about how he missed a lot of time in camp, and he does it with Bailey. He's talked about it with a lot of players when they've had mistakes. I don't know that really is the case anymore where you can legitimately use that. They've had a lot of time to make up for those reps. And if you want to catch a guy up on reps, give him more. So it's really a mess in a lot of different areas.
Quick pause here as we continue to talk to Vince Ferrara from WNML over in Knoxville. The Ravens have issued a statement. They got some positive tests last night multiple members of the organization. Does not specify how many players, how many staff. So they have quarantined and they have shut down their facility as they do the contact tracing. So interesting story out of Baltimore where the Titans just left. Don't know if that will affect the Titans or not, but stay tuned on that. I'm sure Mike Vrabel will be asked about it. We will carry Mike Vrabel's press conference at the bottom of the hour. So, Vince, let's look ahead to Saturday based on all the backdrop here. It's an interesting situation for Tennessee to be in, right, where you're still supposed to beat Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt has made a lot of strides, and yet they're still an 11- or 12-point underdog playing at home because they're winless. But they probably feel a little bit better about the steps that they're taking than Tennessee. So I don't know if I've ever seen a Vanderbilt-Tennessee matchup with this dynamic.
Well, yeah, in terms of how bad both of them are at the same time.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
Yeah. and look, it's crazy
Vanderbilt has gone from the absolute non-competitive, right? Well, like worried that they could even be in a game, to playing quite a bit more respectably, even though you really never had them have a chance to win any of the games, right? So it's odd. So Tennessee should still come in and win the game.
Yes, and there's the fans' expectation is going to be there. I've mentioned it before. It doesn't matter really where either program is, just the names of the universities and their history, and Tennessee fans expect a win over Vanderbilt. I don't think that's accurate, but that's the way it is, and it's really a no-win for Tennessee. If they win the game, they're not going to get a whole lot of credit for it. Jeremy Pruitt's not going to get any slack cut for it. And then if they lose, then you're talking about all different levels of madness. And who knows? Maybe the just the absolute anger goes to apathy. That would be even worse. I mean, that kind of is what happened at South Carolina. And then, oh, by the way, you got two home games. You want to at least get fill your 22% capacity, and maybe that doesn't even happen for those games if you lose this game. I mean, there's a lot to lose here for Tennessee, and I felt even when Vanderbilt was not competitive, I told you guys, you're like, no, I don't even want to hear it. I told you that I thought that Vanderbilt-Tennessee game was in doubt for Tennessee. The way Vanderbilt rises up against Tennessee and the direction that Tennessee was going. And obviously Vanderbilt has been a lot more competitive. I was thinking, watching that game with Florida, I was thinking Tennessee isn't going to do that against Florida. If you, at least in today's college football, if you have a pulse offensively, you've got at least a shot. It's no longer about defense. And Tennessee doesn't do anything great right now to hang their hat on. I felt this way during that game. I think Vanderbilt's going to win on Saturday, and I don't know what I'm going to see.
Well, I'm sorry. Say that again. I think my headset just went out. Could you repeat that?
I think Vanderbilt is going to win on Saturday. Not cover the spread, just outright.
You think they're going to outright win?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I know what the ramifications of that would be. It would be on another level. I don't know that Tennessee does enough things well, and I think that will be one of those settings where if things start to add on to pile up, I think it can get away from them. And being on the road again. I mean, they haven't played at home in the entire month of November. And then who knows what this week is going to bring for Tennessee from a practice standpoint, you know, COVID, what happens with all the tests this week. But even if things are perfect, I think you could very well see things sort of melt down in that game. And I've seen it with much better Tennessee teams. And I know the Vanderbilt teams in the past have been better that have pulled some of those games off. But the way Vanderbilt is playing and the way Tennessee is playing right now, I know they had a good first half. They had yards, and their offensive line played better. Eric Gray, who had a 200-yard game against Vandy at the end of last year. But I don't know that Tennessee's in a position to out-talent Vanderbilt right now. I think a lot of it is between the ears. I think a lot of it is in trust and confidence in the system and the belief in where everything is going. I think a lot of that is fragile with Tennessee. So if things start to go in the wrong direction, Tennessee hasn't shown the ability to reel it back, which is something that they did really well during the win streak, their 8-game win streak. So things would go south for, you know, a play or two or a series or two, but they find a way to turn it back. They have not. Once things go bad, it is downhill. And I don't see how Tennessee avoids that on Saturday.
Well, you hit on two things there that I think are worthy, that are worthy factors. One, during the week, with all the positive tests in the basketball and all of the ongoing problems in general on all college campuses, that would be a concern. Do you have any more positive tests? And the same would go for Vanderbilt, even though their basketball program has, knock on wood, continued to be able to practice. And, of course, Vanderbilt's football team has had a ton of problems with the virus and just barely having enough numbers to stay on. So that's an X factor. The other X factor, Vince, and this will be my last question for you, that would be really intriguing about this game is if Vanderbilt has basically not led at any point. They had a brief 10-7 lead against Florida, which was shocking. They were up 7-0 and then 10-7. And eventually Florida got enough done, although Vanderbilt battled. They hung in there. They did not get blown out of the water. It was probably their best performance given who they were playing. But the fact is they have not gone into a fourth quarter since the first week, which was surprising, against Texas A&M with a chance. I would be really curious, based on what you just said about Tennessee's second halves, if Vanderbilt is somehow in the lead in the fourth quarter, would they know how to close it out? There would be two teams that are sort of an uncharted territory there.
No, that's an excellent point, Willie, in that, you know, when you're in a situation you have not been before, especially in this new roster, new dynamic, that maybe they don't handle that well. Maybe Tennessee will prove me wrong and they'll be much better and they'll look like the team with a better roster, which they are, top to bottom. But I'm just skeptical that we're going to see Tennessee rise up and not coming off the bye week where they didn't have drastic improvement. They did offense and yards and things like that. But in terms of answers at quarterback, you know, if they go Garantano again, you could very well see the same thing where there's some plays made and then there's the catastrophic mistake. And then how do you reel that in? Just haven't seen Tennessee be able to reel things back in. And, something's got to give, to your point in this one. And I know what the backlash would be, and it would be pretty significant if Tennessee loses that game. Certainly not wishing it upon Tennessee. It's just kind of a gut. The only game I've missed in Tennessee this year was that Kentucky game. I picked Kentucky to win, but I didn't pick them to get blown out. So, no, I don't think I've missed a Tennessee game this year. Hmm.
Vince, we will watch with a lot of curiosity, and it's, as some people would like to say, morbid curiosity on Saturday in a very intriguing Vanderbilt-Tennessee matchup. Carry on, and we will talk to you again next week.
Yeah, if you can find ESPN Alternate.
If you do have the access to ESPN SEC Alternate, that's how you would find this
game. A
lot
of alternate channels.
You'll have to make a little effort to tune it in for sure, but I think a lot of people will. Vince, we'll talk
to you
again
soon. Thanks, guys. Have a great week.
All right. Vince Ferrara, WNML. If you missed it, Tennessee has had to pause basketball operations. Positive tests, multiple in the program, including the head coach, Rick Barnes. So this morning, Arizona and Duke's home openers for hoops have been postponed. Tennessee has suspended team activities. Ole Miss has already had to pause activities. Florida has paused activities. I know Middle Tennessee has had big scheduling issues for men's and women's, either from problems on their own or with their opponents. So college hoops getting off the ground here is a mess at this point. Mike Vrabel coming up at 12:30. Speaking of that, the Ravens have had positive tests that they found out about last night after the game. So we don't know all the details, but they've shut down their activities. They're supposed to play on Thanksgiving Day against the Steelers. So a team already on the ropes in the Ravens now has another layer to deal with. On that, we'll get ready for Mike Vrabel. Darren, take it away. You've got a little word from one of our fine sponsors.
Yeah, and the Ravens have indeed shut down their facility, so we'll keep close tabs on that. But DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is giving all players the opportunity to double your money if either Baltimore or Pittsburgh score a touchdown in Thursday night's game. Remember, there's a triple header on Thanksgiving, and the final game of that day is supposed to be the Ravens in Pittsburgh to take on the Steelers. And all you have to do to double your money is to get a touchdown in that game. How? I mean, come on, right? Just opt in with the promotion, place your bet, and then sit back, watch, relax, enjoy the game, and just wait for somebody to score a touchdown. On top of that, DraftKings Sportsbook is offering all new players a deposit bonus up to $1,000. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app. Use the promo code 1025GAME. When you sign up, get this can't-miss offer. Once again, that code 1025GAME. During sign-up, for a limited time only, at DraftKings Sportsbook, you must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Bonus comprised of first deposit bonus. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.
You can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Well, you can tell everybody.
Back here on Darren, Donica, Chase, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joints, smoother than smooth. Good stuff there from Vince Ferrara as we await Titans head coach Mike Vrabel to grab the microphone and do his Monday presser after the overtime victory over the Ravens. Pretty interesting recapping real quickly what Vince said. He has nailed every Tennessee game this year. He has been on the right side of who was going to win and who was going to lose. And he just told us he believes Tennessee is going to lose this game against Vanderbilt. And when we had this discussion with him, I don't know, 6 weeks ago, month and a half ago, I laughed at that notion. All right, let's hear what Mike Vrabel has to say, and this is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. Here's the head coach.
Recovering well, and I will make sure that I ask about her timetable to return and how her injury is coming along.
And, Mike, I guess I'll just start with the news of the day. I guess within the last 30 minutes, the Ravens have announced they've closed their facility and are maybe – checking on the protocols. Are you guys doing anything specifically on your end to take extra precaution?
Everybody here is in, the league is in the extensive protocol. Players are physically distanced in meetings, just reviewing the tape. Had 10 guys in the weight room at a time this morning, just following all those guidelines and protocols. And I guess we'll just wait to hear from the league on any of the contact tracing.
And one football question from yesterday, Landry specifically in overtime, he shows up on the stat sheet three different times on their three plays in that series. What did you see from him down the stretch for you?
Just, he's been solid. We have high expectations for Harold, and he has them for himself. And, we've asked him to do some different things yesterday, get some things off the ball yesterday. Just from the standpoint of scheme and stuff that we felt like would help us against him, which is probably, new for him, but he handled it well. He, showed up and was productive and did a lot of the things that we asked him to do that we thought were important for stopping the run game.
Terrell. Yeah, Coach, apparently – Some people on the field were able to hear you saying how the Ravens were wearing down. Is that something that was, really obvious as you guys were going into the fourth quarter with Henry and the offense going?
Yeah, and I mean, being where we were down, 21-10, just proud of the guys that, I think the physicality, I think playing physical isn't something that's defined in the first, few plays of the game or the first quarter. I think it's something that's a cumulative effect that, our guys are willing to play that way throughout the game and against a Ravens team that is, just as physical. But it was evident, I think, from where I was watching that late in the fourth quarter as well into overtime, that I think that our effort and finish was the difference in the football game.
And I don't have an exact number, but you guys have multiple come from behind victories, especially in the fourth quarter or overtime. But what is it about this team that has that resiliency to be able to come back like this?
Just a testament to our players and their character and their ability not to panic and understand, how we're trying to play the game and the amount of time that we have and our ability to be efficient so that we don't have to, burn timeouts. We had to burn one there to get the 2-point conversion attempted, which is somewhat uncharacteristic, but, I know the guys were excited, and we just have to get back to the huddle and understand what we may be doing in the situation. So they fight and they compete to the end, and that was evident yesterday.
Thank you.
Eric?
Hey, Mike. How big a step was it for Isaiah Wilson yesterday just to be active, to go through the game day experience? And then if Ty does have to miss some time, do you expect Isaiah to compete with Quisenberry there for potentially a starting role?
Sure. I mean, I think we just have talked to Isaiah about continuing to string some days together, positive days, and coming in here and being prepared and practicing and proving to everybody that he knows what to do and he plays in a manner in which we expect our offensive linemen to play.
And then just to clarify, potentially moving forward, do you expect Ty to be out, long term, potentially the season?
We'll continue to evaluate Ty and see where he is moving forward.
John Glenn.
Mike, looks like we're starting to see some bigger numbers on kind of a regular basis from Corey Davis. Wondering what your thoughts are on his improvement this season, if you've noticed anything in particular, how he's upped his game.
I think as Corey continues to build his confidence through practice, that carries over to the game. There's a lot of details that go along with, being a great receiver, about the difference between man or zone and how you want to run a route and those things, maybe where we're asking him to do or the details of a play for play action and the timing that's required for him and the quarterback. And so those things showed up. The really good play strength showed up, catching the ball in traffic. Corey was a big reason that we won that football game yesterday. And, we'll just have to keep continuing to improve.
And another one on Clowney. I guess there have been some reports that he's considering surgery on his knee. Do you expect him back this season, after the IR stint is up?
All I can tell you is that he's on IR right now. So when he would potentially return, I don't know, but it's not going to be this week or next week or the third week, however long he's got to be out with IR.
Thanks. Terry?
Mike, obviously losing Jayon was a tough blow yesterday. How do you can you talk a little bit about the contributions that he's made this season and over the years, and also a little bit about Will Compton stepping in and replacing him?
Well, I think Jayon's been in there since I got here. He's improved. I think that he's made a lot of huge plays for us, and unfortunate that he got injured yesterday. I know he'll support this team and his teammates however he can. But, we'll have to get some guys going. We'll have to get guys in there, and, we'll have to play with another inside linebacker. And yesterday that was Will. And we had a lot of guys that stepped in yesterday that hadn't started, hadn't played a bunch. And, Those guys were excited for their opportunity. They took advantage of them. They were ready to go. Will didn't have, you know, a whole lot of reps with the game plan, but was able to go in and execute it, made a lot of tackles, was active, made tackles at or around the line of scrimmage. And, you know, I was happy for him and proud of him for being ready to go, taking advantage of the opportunity. And we'll try to get David Long back towards the end of the week as he returns from the COVID protocol.
Buck?
Hey, Mike, you got a lot of guys that took advantage of opportunities that you gave them yesterday with playing time. What did you see specifically from Amani Hooker? And what did you how did you feel about his week of preparation leading up into what was a starting role?
I think Amani's continued to improve. He's done some good things for us. He's a versatile player. You know, he was able to make a great play there in the end zone, not foul. I thought that was a great play in the pass disruption. And then obviously to come down with the interception, you know, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, he'd like to have a couple tackles back and, but, you know, I think he continued to work and he's been in there and he plays on third down for us. And then when Kenny wasn't able to go, you know, Amani stepped in there and did some really good things.
And I guess at what point did you guys know that Kenny wasn't going to be able to go and what kind of happened there?
It just was evident late in the week that when he reported symptoms that he was in the protocol, and you know, now he's working his way back through.
David, go ahead.
Mike, Ben Jones was a guy who was able to play yesterday. What's it mean to teammates when a guy can sort of tough it out after not being able to practice during the week like he did yesterday?
I mean, that would be – I would love to hear what his teammates have to say for him, David, but I can only speak for myself and the coaching staff, the amount of respect that we have for a guy like Ben Jones. You know, he never wants to come out. The respect that he has from his teammates is critical. The trust factor, they know he'll do whatever he can do out there with him, how much it means to him, how much football, how much his team means to Ben. I think he's at a point in his career where you give him that opportunity, you trust those types of players and say, hey, you know, you're not going to practice all week. And, you know, if you tell me you can go, I believe that Ben Jones is going to go. He's not going to be a guy that goes out there for five or six snaps and says, well, I can't go. That's the type of person he is. That's the type of player he is. And, you know, we, you know, he's a great leader for us.
Corey?
Hey, Coach, when you and John were constructing the roster, I mean, Corey, AJ, Derek, and I know you weren't here for all those guys, but now Isaiah, these are guys that are all bigger than normal for their position. Was this part of the plan, having these big bodies that would essentially wear people out in the third and the fourth?
I think that's certainly what we want to try to do. I mean, you can't do that everywhere. There's certain positions that, you know, that you're going to have matchups. But, you know, when you have a skill set of size and strength, you have to use it and play to it. But, you know, I think that's the type of team that we want. You know, that's what – you know, when you can host and get in a position to do those and play those games late in the season, meaningful games in late in the season, sometimes with weather is a critical factor, that those are the types of players that you're going to want to have.
And I wanted to ask you about your team's resiliency from the aspect that you had a million injuries headed into the game and then more during the game, and you're down 21-10, yet you've established a culture where this team didn't feel sorry for itself. Is that one of the more gratifying things you've been able to do as head coach?
I think so. You know, I think that we always talk about not having front runners and not having guys that are excited about playing and doing things when it's going well. But you know, being able to withstand the tough times that come along with this game and this profession, that it's a grind and being able to battle and withstand the grind.
Emily?
Hey, Coach. Just kind of, do you mind explaining a little bit of what kind of happens next with the protocols with the Ravens having the multiple positive tests? Obviously, since everybody's on the intensive protocols now, not a lot changes from your perspective. Is it just kind of a wait and see from the league as to what this does for you guys?
Yeah, Emily, I think that what happens is they go back through the contact tracing and, you know, they look at it from the game day with the people that are involved and kind of go from there. And we'll wait to see. And you know, we're focused on what it is that we're doing here. And then they'll update us on whether they think that we need to have discussions about what could, you know, what transpired from the game.
Terry?
Mike, when you went back and looked at the film, how did Aaron Brewer do first time out?
Just like I thought, just like I said after the game, he competed, he finished, wasn't perfect, but he battled, you know, and I know in doing so, you know, you earn the respect of your teammates when you're down there, and guys are catching passes, and he's pushing piles, you know, pass to John O, that he's going in there and trying to help John O get extra yards around the goal line, and AJ on the sideline, and you know, there's numerous examples, and you know, that's what we believe in, is about effort and finish.
Jim?
Mike, obviously Lamar Jackson, a unique guy to prepare for. How did you kind of simulate what you'd see on Sunday in practices leading up to the game, and how do you think that paid off in the game?
Well, Cam Batson helped us out, you know, and obviously Logan helped us out, but, you know, that was – you know, it takes a group effort, you know, for everybody to understand the plays and to be able to get the look and the speed of it. And so a lot of credit to our show team and those guys running those plays for us.
And what's the challenge facing a team twice in 3 weeks like you're going to do on Sunday against the Colts? And just what do you have to do better this time? Maybe kind of goes without saying, but what's the challenge to your team as you see them again?
Just try to get some more stops, limit long drives, get off the field, try to be able to run the ball, try to be able to establish the line of scrimmage, be better on special teams, play more complementary, try to find ways to turn the football over and make sure that we're taking care of it.
John Glennon.
Mike, as you guys look at replacements for some of the positions that are had injured guys, is it reasonable at all to think there are free agents out there now that could be more than a depth player, or is it more of a situation of, you know, you're looking to the roster strictly?
You know, it's hard. You know, John and I talked about that today. You know, you're going to bring somebody in that's not going to be available for the game, you know, going through protocol. So, that you just try to stock the roster with guys and make sure that those guys on the practice squad are ready to go.
Right. And then curious, you know, the new rule with IR this year with just the 3 weeks, how much has that benefited, you know, your team? And, you know, would you be in favor of something similar, you know, sticking going forward?
And we've used it for a couple guys, and you know, we'll see about the guys that are on there now about coming off and, you know, returning to practice. You know, I mean, it gives you a lot of flexibility, which, you know, is always nice. You know, whatever they decide, we'll, like everything else, whatever they decide, that's what we'll do.
Thanks.
All right, Coach, ran through all the questions. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike. There you go. Titans head coach Mike Vrabel, his Monday presser, talking about their overtime victory in Baltimore against the Ravens. And that was brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. Anything stand out to you?
I think he played it pretty close to the vest. including things like Isaiah Wilson. I don't think he was at all committal to, hey, he's going to have to take a bigger role. He's going to have more responsibility. It was just very generic answers on he's got to continue to string together positive practices, positive days. So very nebulous. So that doesn't signal to me that anything has changed on their outlook for Isaiah Wilson, despite all of the injuries that they have on the offensive line. So that stood out to me. The other thing is I do think that with all of the storm they're going through in who's up, who's down, who do we have on the practice squad, do we need to bring in some more free agents who couldn't possibly play on Sunday, but maybe down the road we might need them? You know, they're trying to keep that collective belief that they're going to find a way to get it done. And that's probably the best thing you can say about this team, right? They just believe they're going to figure it out and find ways to continue to be successful. Those are the two things that stood out to me. It was a long press conference with not a lot of meat to it when you get down to it, right?
Yep. I mean, a lot of stuff he couldn't really, you know, is asked about the Ravens situation. Obviously, they've closed down their facility today. What does that mean?
Right.
Moving forward, you know, he's just talking about, you know, contact. They'll go through, you know, the steps and basically, you know, it's in the league's hands and they'll listen to what the league has to say behind the scenes.
Right. Well, and that David Long would come off of the COVID list was probably the other newsworthy nugget that he threw out there, that they expect him to be available, and that's good timing with the loss of Jayon Brown because he'll figure into the replacement there.
Yep. He also talked about Aaron Brewer a little bit. It's interesting whenever Vrabel is asked about players, right? How you never know where he's going to go. Sometimes he says absolutely nothing. Sometimes he gives you a surprisingly longer answer than you thought. And then sometimes he just kind of gives you a generic. And I felt like with Aaron Brewer, it was weird that he threw out, I'm sure he earned the respect of his teammates. I thought that was kind of I don't know. I'm sure he earned the respect of his teammates. Well, I mean, I don't know. It's like, I want to talk about it. I really don't know what to say. You know, he's fine. I'm sure his teammates respect him now.
Yeah, see, I don't know if that is him trying to just stay consistent because he doesn't like to talk about a bad performance by a player, right? He doesn't ever call out a player when asked about, hey, why is this guy struggling? He almost never offers much. Mm-hmm. So maybe he's just trying to be consistent and saying when a guy's doing a good job, he's not going to go that far with it. Either that or maybe Brewer didn't – we shouldn't get our hopes up too much about
Well, and
Brewer.
He's done that before, right? He's kind of done the – without saying, hey, it's one game, relax type of deal. That's kind of what his answer is saying. Hey, it's one game, relax.
And the assignment will be tougher this week.
Exactly, yeah. And that's probably the right approach because, you know, one game doesn't define anything. Like I've said before, this league, it's, you know, you can get away with a good month. You can even get away with a phenomenal year. But the great ones, the really, really good ones, the ones that, you know, are year in and year out starters are the ones who the league, while the league is figuring out, they also figure out the league, right? And I know that's a long ways off from Aaron Brewer. I get that. But I'm saying that's what he's basically saying. He understands what it takes to last 14 years in the league because I'm sure there were so many times his coaches were asked, you know, what do you think about this Mike Vrabel guy? You know, this cat, you know, first round. And, you know, they're probably like, hey, he's had a good week or, yeah, he had a good game or, you know, like, relax. It's a good game. It's a good week. It's a good month for him. But, hey, you know, would love to see this for 16 games, but who knows? So I'm sure coaches gave the same answer about him, you know, early on in his career.
I think
it's,
that's
it's fair
point.
To answer it that way.
Yeah, and I think that that's a mentality that he takes and tries to have rub off on his team, which I think has worked well for them, as we have talked about many, many times. And Corey Curtis laid out a really good question. You know, you had all these guys. You had Vaccaro go down on top of all the guys we knew on Friday wouldn't be able to play. You know, Clowney goes on IR, and, you know, Saffold is ruled out, and on down the list. No Jackson. No, and they're down 21-10, and it looks bleak, right? And you've lost Jayon Brown in the middle of the game. Then you lose Sombrio. But that's the mentality, is they still kept battling. They kept thinking, let's keep working here. We got a chance. And, you know, somebody makes a play, and they get just enough stops. It was, I don't want to say it was miraculous, but it was a pretty remarkable win under the circumstances against the opponent that we're talking about. A thorn in the Titans' side for decades, a team that's been a very consistent winning program, right? Even though they're a little down right now, this is still a program that expects to win. The Ravens are about as consistent as they come relative to the salary cap era. It's them and the Steelers and the Patriots, right? There's only a handful of teams that seem to stay consistent over the long term, and the Titans find a way to beat them. That says a lot.
Packers, throw them in there.
Sure.
Usually it's because they have a quarterback.
Now, speaking of the Ravens, right, I think we're all curious, you know, is there going to be more? Like, I this happened so recently, like just minutes before the press conference, right? So I don't know if Mike Vrabel even knows exactly what's to come here. The thing that you're going to lean on, I'm sure, is so far there hasn't been a lot of swapping team to team, passing the virus on during the course of the game, but I guess people are going to want to know who are the personnel for the Ravens that tested positive last night. How many of them played in the game? Like, you just you keep your fingers crossed that it's not going to, that you don't have to go through this whole thing again if you're the Titans, right?
Well, how many? I mean, there hasn't been any shutdowns for a while, right? They had that bad.
Kind of do.
Well, I know, but there's been teams all over the league littered with shutting down the facility for a day or testing positive. It's every day, it feels like.
Oh, yeah.
But guess what? They've played every game since, you know, back in what, week five or whatever.
It has been remarkable that they've been able to do that. And like we said, it's usually within a team, and it's not, Team A played Team B. Team A had some positive cases, and now Team B has a lot of problems. We haven't had that yet. And along those lines, in the upset of the day, it might be Notre Dame in the aftermath of the whole rush the field thing. Did you see this? This came down in the last few minutes, that they did all the testing after the rushing the field, the win over Clemson. They've only had one guy who's in isolation, in contact tracing. Remarkably, nobody for Notre Dame picked up the virus after all of that. I don't know about all the students, but they released a statement about an hour ago and said, we've done all the testing, the tracing, and we've had one positive test. That's an upset.
That is amazing. That is amazing. All right, we will come back. Start the fourth and final hour with Trey Wingo, our buddy. Talk a little NFL with him, Titans and Ravens. What are his thoughts on the Titans? What are his thoughts on the Ravens moving forward? What are his thoughts on the Steelers? We'll get into all and the division, especially this big matchup between the Titans and the Colts in Indy on Sunday. We'll do all that and more with Trey Wingo on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.